Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to another edition of the Dogger Pass Podcast. This is for UFC Vegas 87. Producer Megan is on the sticks. Cody Saftick is on the line. We had a little bit of a scare pre-show here. Didn't know if Cody's internet was going to work. And some people are probably going, well, Cody's internet kind of never really works. And it's just like, well, it was actually out. They're having like a windstorm where Cody is. But we've got him on camera. Everything's working out. By the graces of God, we got Cody with his full video. So pretty pumped about that. We were going to have to go with phone or board.
Yeah, there's like some crazy weather going on. It goes from spring back to winter all within the span of the same day. But yeah, today was like, for Canadian fans, it was like 10 degrees all day. And then they were clearly staying, oh, like at 11, maybe noon, maybe 1 p.m., it's going to drop. It's like, well, how much is it going to drop? They're like, about a 20-degree shift. So it's going from 10 degrees to like minus 17 because of this windshield. So the power got knocked out because of the high winds. And I'm like, nah, I got to shoot the show today. Doing it tomorrow is not really an option because then you're putting it out late in the week. Every single fighter on this card is going to be a 10-to-1 favorite by tomorrow. Like, just such a weird card to begin with. But also, it's just like, we got to get it out to Fight Network. We got to get it out and about, so... I was going to just do a phone or board, but yeah, by the graces of the MMA gods and of the viewing audience, we've got at least got some video. So if it gets shitty or if it gets choppy, it's normally choppy and shitty anyways. But yeah, we'll try to figure out a workaround. Last week, yeah, it looked like it was going to be absolute hot fire. If you hedged at the end on the Brandon Moreno, you didn't do bad. If you let it ride, unfortunately, Brandon Moreno didn't fight for our dollar. And that's one thing. Brandon Moreno's got that dog in him. He's been in countless fight of the nights. He's been countless, you know, fights that were just... indicative of him pushing it and him wanting it, his desire. And 31 years old is not old by any stretch, but he just fought so flat. So you pick some of these guys and you hope that they're going to go put their best foot forward. And sometimes they don't want it. They don't fight for your dollar. Unfortunately, Brandon Moreno was one of those guys. And then moving forward, he somewhat becomes untrustworthy. Like, I don't know how much I want to bet this guy going forward coming off a performance like that. So could have been a killer week. Unfortunately, he kind of slipped through the cracks. This week is just absolute chalk city. But you know Paul Shaughnessy. One of them is going to shit in the apple pie. So hopefully we can figure out who that is going to be.
Yeah, I was telling a couple people earlier this week how much like I like betting underdogs. But I look at the underdogs on maybe not the smaller underdogs. I could see some like argument for them. But some of the big underdogs, it's like it's tempting. But it's like, do I really want to put my hard-earned dollars on X? And the answer is usually no. It's a very, very tricky one. A lot of the rightful favorites have been steamed potentially out of control, but I don't have the cojones to pull the trigger on some of their lackluster opponents. So yeah, the real key here is who's gonna shit in the apple pie. Hopefully we will find that out right now. Main event, we've got Shamil Gaziev taking on Jairzinho Rozenstruik, minus 150 for Gaziev, plus 130 for Rozenstruik. Heavyweight volatility, Cody, who you got here?
Yeah, well, it's just like you said. So normally when you've got, high-level heavyweights is one thing, but mid-level heavyweights, dare I say low-level heavyweights, you're always interested in that plus money just because it's heavyweights, man. Anything can happen. There's always a puncher's chance. Jairzinho Rozenstruik in particular, if you can get plus money on him, he personifies puncher's chance because he's got that death touch. He's got that ability to crumple over opponents. So, again, it's always going to be tempting if I can get a guy like Rozenstruik at plus money versus a mid-level opposition. This fight's going to go one of two ways. We're hoping for the latter. But the former, it would be devastating, is that Gaziev matches up very good against Rozenstruik in that you've got a Dagestani wrestler, big, strong guy. Yeah, he lives and trains out of Bahrain. Yeah, he's got citizenship there, but he does got that Russian in him. He does got the ability to get that takedown. And Rozenstruik doesn't have particularly good takedown defense. He never really has. He's got the death touch. He's got some tricky kickboxing. You know, he's a big, heavy hitter. But as far as him being on his back, he's had very little success. So there's no reason to think Gaziev's not going to get those takedowns, and Gaziev probably rolls him up. Here's why Gaziev pick's not super straightforward, is that you've got a 34-year-old Gaziev, not old by heavyweight standards, but it's not like this is some young Russian prospect. It's not like this is a future title challenger. It's not like this is a guy with a very high ceiling. He's just simply a guy that can win mid to low level fights in this division by way of being a wrestler at heavyweight, which there's very few and far between. But at 34, this is pretty much the final version of him. I don't expect that many improvements. Traditionally, he's had weak cardio. He finishes a lot of these guys in the first or second round, gets that takedown, smashes them. If he doesn't get the takedown, maybe he bum rushes them in that early going, lands something big. But it's been somewhat soft competition, and you haven't really seen him extended. The one time you did see him extended, this Kirill Kornilov fight at Ares FC, which was less than 2 years ago, he tired. He big time tired. So to me, gas tank could be an issue. And now you got him booked in a 5-round fight. So similar to what we were talking about Joe Pyfer a few weeks back, Pyfer is a talented guy, but he's not shown that he can fight 3 rounds. And now he's booked in a 5-round fight, which is in and itself going to be, you know, new territories for him. So I'm a little bit worried that even if Gaziev does get the takedowns, if he doesn't get his patented first round ground and pound finish, if he doesn't get his first, you know, first round and a half, maybe 2 round quick finish, he's going to gas. And when he gasses, those takedowns don't become available. And when he gasses, all of a sudden you're standing flat footed in front of Yarzino Rozenstruik. So it's a problem. Now, flip side to that with Rozenstruik, this guy has fought 5 rounds, actually a couple times. We all remember when he knocked out Alistair Overeem in the 5th round, which in itself is pretty credible, right? But he also fought Ciryl Gane, a former UFC champion, for 5 rounds. So cardio is not necessarily a huge issue for him because he doesn't really overexert himself. He picks and chooses his shots. It's usually a more of a slower paced thing, but he's proven that he can fight for 5 rounds. And again, he's proven that he's dangerous in that 5th round, having knocked out Alistair Overeem. Not only that, but like he's been in a type of fight with Curtis Blaydes before where he is just getting taken down the entire time. He's getting controlled the entire time, but he's able to survive off his back. See, where he's not great is when Francis Ngannou's chucking bombs in his face, or Alexander Volkov, who's a very precise, long striker, is all up in his face, or, you know, Jailton Almeida is in full mount. Those are very bad spots. Gaziev don't strike like Francis Ngannou or Alexander Volkov, for that matter, and he's not Jailton Almeida on the ground. So I can kind of write Yarzino Rozenstruik a bit of a pass for like those prior losses because they're the best guys. He only loses to the best guys. Against a guy like Gaziev, he probably faces early adversity. He probably drops the 1st round. He might even drop the 1st 2 rounds. But as long as he can survive those 1st 2 rounds, Gaziev's not Curtis Blaydes. He's not going to continue with the pressure. He's not going to continue with that momentum. And so I feel like this is a fight that Rozenstruik loses early. If he gets finished, it's over. You lose. If he doesn't get finished, this thing drags on a little bit. You're going to get a much better plus money tag on him, or a plus money price tag in the live market on him because he's lost a couple rounds. And he's going to be better suited for 3rd, 4th, 5th round, knockout Gaziev when he's tired. That's how I see this one going. So Gaziev either smokes him and makes him look bad, or Rozenstruik holds on long enough to smoke him and make me look good. Dog pick in the first fight because we got a whole lot of favorites the rest of the card. But I do think this is an underdog main event.
Yeah, I like the Overeem fight. It's one of those things that's like that power for Rozenstruik obviously carries over all 5 rounds. So, yeah, if Gaziev doesn't, I expect Gaziev to go out there, get the takedowns easy, at least early in the fight. And then what? And then what? That's the real big question. He's going to be my pick, but yeah, honestly, at like minus 150 plus 130, it's like, I don't know. This kind of does feel like a 60-40 type of fight to me. Like, I'm not entirely sure. It's not one that I feel like I have like a big time edge on by any stretch of the imagination. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And we will find out on Saturday. Moving on down, we've got Vitor Petrino taking on Tyson Pedro. Petrino minus 300 favorite. Pedro can be had for plus 240. Pedro could be dangerous early in this fight, but I like what I see from Vitor Petrino. I know it's like minus 300, but on this card, minus 300 doesn't seem like all that bad of a money line to be taken when we get into like some of the next fights where you're like, oh my God, like they're really making you pay the piper to get in on the action here. Pacino just seems to be like developing, getting better. The skills are pretty well rounded all the way around. Like, you know, he's got a little bit of everything. The striking's pretty solid. Two half decent wins already, obviously in the UFC. Two proper actual wins. Even like, you know, take Marcin Prachnio, who got him into round three and like kind of showed it was like a little bit of a development fight for him, but like, you know, Prachnio's went on and beat Devin Clark, which is like not a bad win for him. So it's like some of his wins are looking not so bad. Bukauskas is, you know, a well-seasoned veteran. So it's like they're moving this guy along pretty well. Pedro could be dangerous early, as he is in most of his fights. But I feel like, you know, if Pedro doesn't catch him early, Pacino will 100% take over. We saw in the Prachnio fight, it's like this kid can fight a high pace. He can get takedowns. He can run the whole gamut. Chin so far has checked out for him. He could obviously get Pedro out of there early, but I like him even more if this thing gets late. Like, he's proven to me that he's going to have a big advantage if he gets out of the first round. So Petrino's the pick for me. What about you?
Yeah, so the one question mark for me with Pacino is actually the gas tank. Like, I know that he has been getting that second round submission and he has gone the distance, but like, yeah, he fights a little bit emotional still, and he kind of exerts himself a little too much. So we've seen in prior fights, if the fight goes a little bit longer, he still looks good, but that athleticism, that explosiveness, the volume certainly, output's not exactly there for him. So there's certain things to be worked out. Also, when he fought Rodolfo Bellotto on the Contender Series, he got rocked. Like, he got knocked down. His chin's still a little up in the air. But here's the good news for him, Paul. He's only 26 years old. That's learning on the job. You're going to get rocked. You're going to get put in bad spots. You're going to get tired, but you're going to continuously get better. And that's what you're seeing out of him. He's working things out in real time. I thought he looked really good against Marcin Prachnio. Like, quality. This is a future top prospect. 4 takedowns. Complete domination on the ground. Didn't overly get tired. Like, here's a fight that he gets a third round submission in. Third round arm triangle. But takes him into some deeper waters. All looks good. It's that last fight against Modestus Bukauskas. Like, on paper, second round submission, all good. But as a guy that had him bet, man, I'm glad he got that submission when he did, because you can see he's starting to get tired. But Modestus Bukauskas is that savvy veteran that you mentioned. He is a former Cage Warriors champion. He is a guy that moves laterally and gives you a couple things to think about. So it's not the easiest fight. And again, at 26, these are good fights for him to be taking and progressing and going forward. Tyson Pedro is like the complete opposite. He was once that young prospect. He was once that guy with that shine on him. And the UFC's done everything in their power to matchmake this guy as absolutely soft as humanly possible, and have given him those opportunities. He's just never really gotten out of first gear. You know, he starts off, it's like, oh, this guy's got a good little submission game. He submits Khalil Roundtree with the rear naked choke. Then all of a sudden, he knocks out Paul Craig. Like, that's a credible win. Those are two credible wins. Massively credible wins. Aged really well. One by knockout, one by submission. And then beyond that, Paul, it's like he never got going. Suddenly, he's not a grappler. If he tries to grapple top grapplers, it don't go good for him. If he tries to strike with top strikers, it also don't go good for him. So they'll give him the Harry Hunt suckers of the world. They'll give him the Ike Villanuevas of the world. His last time out against Pleasure Man, that Anton Tricali, looked a little bit better. But again, just clips him 2 minutes into the first round, puts him away. One has to wonder if Tyson Pedro's what he's got. Now, compared to Vitor Petrino, I'm a little worried about Vitor Petrino's cardio and how he progressed. Yeah, but Tyson don't got the cardio to make that a factor. Oh, you know, Tyson's been, he's been icing fools, you know. You've seen Bellotto rack Pacino. Yeah, but Pacino seems like he's got more firepower, probably as good, if not slightly better striker, better leg kicks, you know, more versatile, more weapons at his disposal. Don't mind him there. The key here, though, Paul Shaughnessy, is the ground game. Yeah, 100%. I know you alluded to this, but Petrino's got an ability to go out there and get the takedowns. Once he does get you to the ground, he's got smothering top control. What I noticed with Tyson Pedro is that because the UFC's been giving him such a favorable matchups, is that they're not really testing him, so to speak. Anton Tricali can wrestle, but that fight was done before it got started. He never really had a chance to get going. Modestus Bukauskas is a striker. Harry Hunsucker can't do anything. Ike Villanueva is a boxer. Mauricio Shogun Hua took him down 3 times. Saperbek Safarov took him down twice. Latifi 4 times. I'd give him a pass on that. But overall, his takedown defense is 52%. And he's fought almost no wrestlers, no grapplers. He's fought a whole lot of guys that wanted to stand in front of him and a whole lot of guys that couldn't do nothing about it. But he hasn't actually fought a whole lot of guys like Pacino that can strike with him, but could also very well just take him down, smother him, catch a submission, or just put a mauling on him. And if this fight gets out of the first round, Petrino's starting to huff and puff a little bit, well, then rest assured, Tyson Pedro's also going to be huffing and puffing, and it kind of evens out the playing field for you. So a multiple paths to victory, Petrino's a minus 300 favorite compared to some of these bigger ones, as you mentioned earlier. I'm on board.
All right, we got Muhammad Makhachev taking on Alex Perez. Makhachev is a minus 350 favorite. Perez can be had for plus 290. I mean, the biggest question here is Alex Perez going to make 125 pounds? Because that doesn't usually happen for him. How many times has this guy missed weight? I'm looking twice through officially. His Tapology. It's only twice?
Yeah.
I guess. He made it last time out, I guess, against Pantoja almost a year and a half ago.
It hasn't been a good run.
It's been a bad run for him. I mean, look, the amount of canceled fights here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 canceled fights and 2 fights in the last 3.5 years. That's the Alex Perez experience. It's one of those things that's just like, okay, Makhachev's looked, he's young, obviously he's developing, he's going to be getting better every single fight. I mean, round one against Tim Elliott, that was a savvy veteran, and he was struggling in round one. Tim definitely pulled off round one. Round two, he got to his basics, which was, you know, getting the takedowns, getting tons of top control. Kind of lucky he didn't, like, get stood up in spots, because he doesn't really stay all that busy when he's, you know, maintaining top control. Really kind of goes back to, like, the Malcolm Gordon fight, where it's like he was on his way to losing that fight, and then the last 30 or last 40 seconds snatches up an armbar, gets the finish. But it's like that was a pretty low-level opponent. Alex Perez, if he shows up, if he makes weight, if he's, you know, got everything together, it's like the one thing you can kind of guarantee from him is, like, he's going to show a lot more striking capabilities and probably a more well-rounded skill set than everybody that he's faced, or at least more power in those hands, which may cause problems for Makhachev. If there wasn't the massive layoff, so many injuries, all that other stuff, I would definitely consider a bet on Alex Perez. I'm going to pick Makhachev just because I have no idea what to expect from Alex Perez at this point. But at minus 350, I don't know what to do with this number. What about you?
Yeah, it's a total shot in the dark, right? Like, what can you really expect from a guy that's just been off that long? And it's not even just, like, this current layoff. It's been the layoff over the last number of years, sprinkled in with a couple fights here and there that haven't really lasted all that long. So he's got almost zero cage time, and there's injuries, and there's just, yeah, a million other things. But Makhachev could be a great fighter, could be a great fighter. But at 23 years old right now, this very moment, not a great fighter. And so if you're going to fade him, you're going to want to fade him sooner rather than later. Because as Paul Shaughnessy mentioned, he's only going to be getting better fight to fight. Now, we hammer that point on the show every single time. These young fighters are going to continuously making improvements. Makhachev's no different. He's got a dope-ass amateur record. He's so far undefeated in his pro career. He's on something like a 32-fight winning streak, both careers combined. And he's still only 23 years old. This guy's got the wrestling. He's not quite Khabib level, but again, he's so young. You know, in the next 7 years, in the next 10 years, could he eventually get to that smothering level? Sure. He's got the ability to chain wrestle. He's got that ability, that tenacity to stick on guys. His striking, not very good now, but Khabib's striking wasn't very good once upon a time. And then all of a sudden, he's going out there and dropping Conor McGregor with the right hand. It develops over time. So I'm not trying to be a Makhachev hater, like, I don't think this guy's good. I just think if you were, in theory, going to fade him, you're going to want to do it within the last few fights, which he's seemingly skimmed by in, or the next few fights, because at some point he probably does hit his stride. I am going to take that dog shot, though, on Alex Perez. Again, someone's going to shoot in the apple pie. One of these big favorites is going to do it. Makhachev at this number seems as prone as any other of the other big favorites. So we'll start with Makhachev. Again, like, it's not that he hasn't been tested. He's fought in good guys, but he shows glaring holes in a bunch of these fights. Going back to his Brave CF career, the fight with Blaine O'Driscoll, there's massive issues there. His fight with Charles Johnson dominates him with multiple takedowns, but he can't really do much with the takedowns. There's not a whole lot of ground and pound. There's not a whole lot of submission threat. It's just a whole lot of takedowns. Now, that's fine, but who are the judges? Because we're coming off a card in Mexico City where takedowns didn't mean shit. You could rack them up. One guy got 9 takedowns, still loses the fight. So you need to be doing something with the takedown. Now, if I'm going to pay 3-1, 4-1, I need takedowns and I need ass kicking once the fight hits the ground. I don't just need takedowns because it leaves it subjective to somebody that's going to say, well, the other guy's landing elbows to the head while you were taking him down and you lose. So inadvertently, there's some issues there with Makhachev and that style of just repeatedly taking you down. The Malcolm Gordon fight, okay? This is a fight that he should be 10-1 in. Malcolm Gordon just recently retired. Makhachev should kill him. The first round, yeah, he handles him fairly easily. The second round, you see the wheels start to fall off. His cardio is not rock solid. It's not Khabib cardio. It's not that aggressiveness. It's not Chimaev aggressiveness. Again, don't be comparing him to these guys because he's not there yet. Not by a long shot. Maybe someday, but not now. And so Malcolm Gordon wins the second round, and Malcolm Gordon is on his way to winning the third round, and he pulls it out. But that could have been the first time that a fade on him would have worked, and it would have paid handsomely. The very next fight, Jafel Fino basically breaks his kneecap, cracks his kneecap with a knee bar, almost subs him. That one, that could have been your fade opportunity right there. But he squeaks on by that one. The Tim Elliott fight, Tim Elliott is a washed, aged veteran with a little magic left in the tank from here to there. Certainly not an easy opponent. But a guy that, you know, the young buck who's going to take him into some deeper waters should certainly win that fight. For the record, UFC 294 in Abu Dhabi, Tim Elliott is up two rounds on two of the judges' scorecards going into the third round. All he has to do is survive the third round, and he wins the fight. But he doesn't know that. He thinks it's 1-1, so he shoots himself into a stupid takedown, ends up getting caught in an arm triangle choke. Classic Tim Elliott. But what I'm saying is that that's actually a stretch of three straight fights. He could have lost the Malcolm Gordon fight. He could have lost the Jafel Fino fight. He could have lost the Tim Elliott fight. Wins are wins, baby. That's all people remember at the end of the day. But if you're looking to fade a guy who's a minus 350 favorite, you look to fade the guy who is in close fights, who's, you know, not barely squeaking by, but there's moments for his opponents to come out there and capitalize and get the job done. And I say this time and time again, Paul, flyweight is the most competitive division in the sport. You got 125ers, doesn't matter what the odds are, it's a close fight. So this last card in Mexico City, right? This Felipe Dos Santos versus Victor Altamirano. Dos Santos is a minus 300 favorite, right? And yet it's as close of a fight as you could get. Altamirano was the guy with the 9 takedowns. And people think that he got robbed, but it's really close and it's a split decision fight. That Ronaldo Rodriguez versus Dennis Bondar, it was an even money fight anyways. It didn't matter. The main event, Moreno. Moreno is a minus 300 favorite over Brandon Royval, but it's super close and it's super competitive because that's flyweight in a nutshell, is that they're very competitive fights. So you don't want to be paying 3-1 on these guys in close fights. Makhachev's in close fights. Again, there's tons of moments for his opponent to capitalize on. It's like, who's going to reach out and grab it? The guys he's fought to this point haven't been those guys. But maybe Alex Perez is. So why take Alex Perez? Okay. So he's only 31 years old, so he's not super old. For flyweight, he's getting there. But in the grand scheme of things, as a pro athlete, he's just entering the prime of his career, and he's not conceivably shot by no stretch. So, you know, let's at least, you know, dispel that notion that he's completely done. Again, you look at his record, it's like his last two losses are to Pantoja and Davison Figueiredo. So two former champions, two very good former champions. And unfortunately, he got caught in submissions. Those guys are leaps and bounds better than Makhachev in both all-around MMA capabilities, but also specifically grappling. And they're both former champions, not a 23-year-old undefeated prospect on the way up. So you can give him some type of pass, but keep in mind he was on a nice run. 3-fight winning streak, beats Yusir Formiga, leg kicks, career best performance. He's scheduled to fight Brandon Moreno, and they need a last-minute replacement to fight Davidson Figueiredo for the title. So he puts his hand up and he takes the fight on, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days notice against the champ. And he gets caught in a guillotine choke less than 2 minutes into the first round. So that took away all the momentum. Guy's on a 3-fight winning streak. He's about to fight Moreno. He's building his way there. And because opportunity arises, you take a fight on 3 days notice. It's a bad spot. Then all the weight misses, then the cancellations, then the injuries, and then he gets Pantoja on his return. Like, talk about a tough go. So take those off the table. He's still that guy. He's on paper got superior striking than Makhachev. He's a BJJ black belt. His grappling off his back, because he probably will end up on his back at some point. His grappling off his back, not bad. Yeah, he's getting submitted by Pantoja. Big deal. Yeah, he's getting submitted by Davidson Figueiredo. It happens. But Makhachev catching him with a submission would be a lot harder, I think. And again, Perez comes from a wrestling background. He knows how to grapple. He knows how to wrestle. He can make it a little tougher for Makhachev than past opponents. He can strike a little bit better than past opponents. He can mix in some offensive wrestling of his own. And again, he figures to have some decent grappling on paper. So that last thing is the year and a half long layoff and the question marks and the weight misses and all that shit. So that's a problem. You'll have to wait till weigh-ins to really see him at weigh-ins to see, you know, how he looks and how you feel about it. But what I will leave you with is you and I both hit some plus money on Brian Ortega last weekend for no other reason than sitting on the sidelines isn't necessarily the worst thing. Gives you time to work on your skills. If you're a skilled fighter, time off is not the worst thing going. You're not coming back to the game as a 35-year-old, as a 36-year-old with a torn labrum and a bad knee, and you're pulling a Rony Barcellos, popping your goddamn shoulder back in place between rounds. Thank God, Rony. You don't want to be that guy. But 31, it's conceivable that he's not lost that much of a step. He comes back in okay shape, shakes off some ring rust in the first round, and then makes it a tough, competitive, flyweight type affair. So if someone's going to shit in the apple pie, Makhachev is as likely as a candidate as any of the other guys, more of a candidate, in my opinion, than the other guys. And so dog shot number two, I will actually take Alex Perez. And I know it's the PRP pick. It's all the way at the bottom, but someone's going to do it. Hopefully we're on the right track.
Yeah. I mean, even with Ortega, it started out and it looked pretty bad, right? Like he hurts himself, like jumping, hyping himself up inside of the cage, did something to like rolled his ankle. And even for the first like couple minutes of that fight, it's just like, oh God, like this is horrible, bad luck. And he obviously turned the corner, and I mean, the real thing with Ortega has always just been, like, the guy will just, to his own detriment in some of his fights, the amount of damage that he can take. Like, he Homer Simpsons guys, and then he Homer Simpsons them to the point that it's just, like, he ends up getting a takedown eventually, and obviously his jiu-jitsu is world-class. His striking has come a long way as well. So, yeah, good for Brian Ortega. Good for T-City getting back on track. You know, here's the thing with Makhachev, Cody, is that I faded this guy a whole bunch of times. So, like, I have no intention to bet this fight. I'm just sick of this kid pulling a rabbit out of his hat every single time that I've been like, I've got a plus 600 on this person. Ever since I watched that Blaine O'Driscoll fight, his fight literally before he came to the UFC, I'm like, this guy's record is incredibly padded, overrated. And he's kind of proven that to me. It's just like, I don't have a winning ticket to show for it. So,
luckily for
I'm
you,
I'm probably
though,
just going to straight
his
up.
His odds in the UFC have been minus 500, minus 490,
doesn't
minus 1400,
minus
1000, minus 400. And now he's like a minus 350. So it doesn't take long to get your money back. You just need one of these guys to prove what you know. They got to prove it. I'm hoping Perez is the guy to prove it.
I'm not flipping my pick. I'm still going to pick Makhachev. Got me thinking. But the reason I'm not going to do it, Cody, is because last week you were talking a whole big old game about Sam Hughes. And then what happened when we got to the PRP? You went with Waregi. You're like, I can't take two plus 400s. So I'm not flipping. Not flipping. I think Makhachev's going to some, like, the thing is, yeah, super, super low volume, control, top time, or top control time. Like, the one thing that really works in his favor, too, here is that we're in the apex. There's no fans. There's nobody booing to get you to stand up the fight. Like, if this fight's in Mexico, probably a different story all the way together. Like, Herb Dean in that one fight, and I don't really hate it, but it's like, I forget which fight it was. I think it was in the main event. There was standing cage control literally for like 15, 20 seconds by Moreno. And like, I don't hate the fact that they separate, but it's not very consistent with like what refs usually let you get away with, which is probably like 30 to 45 seconds without doing all that much. It was just really interesting seeing him like jump in there. And I think having a crowd there really changes the dynamic of those things. I really enjoyed watching UFC Mexico City. I mean, it was a really good card, obviously. Like, they always do a better job when they actually have to go out in public and put on a show. But some of these like Apex shows is just kind of like, I like to watch MMA. I'm still gonna tune in and stuff, but it doesn't feel like an event anymore. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, there's fights on, there's nobody in this small little venue. It feels like soulless, like, you know. It's a content machine, essentially. UFC Mexico City was a lot of fun. But yeah, what I was going to say is that The Apex definitely does favor Makhachev's style, where it's like he's going to throw like 30 significant strikes if this fight goes the full 15 minutes. But, and like there's been plenty of fights where he's went way under that. But yeah, getting those takedowns, getting top control without any oohs and ahs anytime Alex Perez lands a strike, it's like that probably helps a fighter with the style of Makhachev. So Makhachev's still the pick for me.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We got Steve Ursaig taking on Matt Schnell. Ursaig, a minus 380 favorite. Matt Schnell can be had for plus 315. I like Ursaig. He's shown a lot to me, to be perfectly honest. The grappling is obviously pretty slick. I mean, it's all these flyweight guys. They're just kind of good at everything. But I've liked what I've seen from them coming out. But at minus 380, it's like I feel like I've completely missed the boat. What I am interested in, I'll let you break down the fight. I'm going to pick Ursaig. But I think over 1.5 rounds, minus 130 seems like a good look here. Matt Schnell, obviously a lot of people, and like historically, you know, he's a little bit chinny. The chin has been a little bit suspect, but it's like, I haven't seen much from Ursaig to lead me to believe that like he's got that dynamite in his hands. He's more of a wear you down, put up a crazy, crazy high pace to win your to win fights. So I think he'll find takedowns. He could find a submission early, I suppose, but the over 1.5 at minus 130 is what I've got circled as one of my bets this week. What about you?
Yeah, again, I mean, it should. Flyweights are fights that competitive, but yeah, usually go the distance. So I could see this one probably hitting the over, but with Matt Schnell, it's just so hard to say, man. Like, he is 100% a very chinny guy, and the older he gets, I just don't think that durability is going to improve all that much. It's a whole career of it, going back to his fight with Rob Font, knocked out in the first round. Hector Sandoval, some soft shots, knocked out in the first round. He got knocked out in the first round by Alexander Pantoja. His fight with Sumaderji, he got dropped hard. A bad referee stops that fight. Could have been a first-round knockout. And then in his last fight against Matheus Nicolau, he gets knocked down twice in the first round and ends up getting, knocked down twice in the fight, knocked out in the second round. So now he's got like 5 knockout losses. All of those losses are coming in that under like 1.5 rounds. He's got mad durability issues. And this is flyweight, Paul. He fought Rob Font at 135, but the rest of them are at 125. It's not exactly a division full of heavy hitters. And Schnell is a very technical fighter. He's been in the game for over 10 years, going back to that MTV show Caged way back in the day. Like, the guy's paid his dues. Trained at Fortis MMA, trained at American Top Team, you know, been in there with a who's of guys. Like, Matt Schnell is at this point a savvy veteran. But again, when you're fighting 125 pounds, it's all about speed and athleticism and timing and durability, because the guys are so fast, they're going to counter you, and there's 100 significant strikes delivered on both sides for the most part. You're going to get hit. If you can't take that hit, it's going to be a problem. Now, Matheus Nicolau is not exactly a giant power puncher. A lot of these guys aren't, you know, necessarily pure power punchers. So Ursaig, not a power puncher. But I don't think it requires, you know, a firm shot. I just think you need to land a clean shot, which I think is going to be, you know, it's going to be on the table at some point. So Schnell's got a nasty little submission game. He's good with his triangle chokes. He's good off his back. But it's 2024, man. You don't want to be playing off your back. And how does he get off his back? Either he gets knocked down or he gets taken down. Ursaig is a savvy, not veteran, but he's a pretty savvy fighter himself. He's got excellent bag of tricks. He's got some solid grappling. If he's on top of Schnell, I don't think Schnell lands one of those patented Hail Mary type of submissions. It's going to just be more ground and pound and more positional improvements from Craig Ursaig. If it stays standing, Schnell's got a longer jab. He's a little bit quicker with his hands. He's a little bit more technical and tight. And I think he'll have some early success. He'll have some success in certain exchanges. But Ursaig will take one to give one at some point in that middle frame, or, you know, late in the first frame. And I think he either sits him down or he hurts him. Once he hurts him, he takes advantage of the position, improves, and makes it happen. And you got to realize with Matt Schnell, like, only 3 fights ago, he fought the current UFC champion, Brandon Royval. And he drops Royval, man. He had him rocked. He had him hurt. Royval grabs a submission and snaps Chanel. It's like, he's got skills. It's possible. It's I think that Junkyard Dog is going to win more times than not against him. And Ursig has proven, if anything else, dude's got that dog in him, man. On the regional scene and over in Australia and, you know, those fights that he took down under, solid, scrappy guy, work in progress, still young, not fighting the best level of competition, but learning on the job, gaining experience. That's what you do when you're on the regional scene. Makes his debut in the UFC against David Dvorak as a sizable enough underdog, not expected to do much, on short notice. And if anything else, Paul, he kept coming forward. Kept coming forward. He got the takedowns when he wanted to. He stood in the pocket. He made it look good to the judges. He gets the decision. Next fight out with Alessandro Costa. Guy's a brick wall. Big, strong, physical. Had looked pretty okay against Amir Albazi one fight prior. Ursig still managed to take him down. Ursig did some solid work. Ursig put up some decent volume. I know what you're saying. He's not a power puncher. He's not that guy that screams, you know, one hitter quitter. And I'm gonna agree with that assessment. He's not. But I think he's one of these guys that causes a chaotic scramble or causes a chaotic exchange, causes him to make a mistake. They throw down, he clips him with something, and he puts him away. So could your over hit? Yeah. I'm kind of leaning towards this fight not going the distance, and that's what makes the
one and a half. One and a half rounds. We're not talking.
Yeah, but it's Matt Schnell, man. God damn.
I know. That Matt, last seven and a half, you're going, I'm leaning towards it not going the distance. Well, there's a big difference between
Seven and a half, and 15.
Right. I mean, he went the distance against Tyson Nam. That's a guy who hit super, super hard. I will correct you on one thing. You said Brandon Royval is the new heavyweight champion. That is false.
I said heavyweight?
New flyweight champion. That is false. Yeah, Alexandra Pantoja. Alexandra Pantoja is the champion.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. My bad.
Who also knocked out Machnow. I mean, Machnow's chinny as hell. So this could be dead in the water. But yeah, Ursig, I mean, watching his fights, watching his regional scene fights, it's like he doesn't really strike me as, maybe I'm just playing a risky game, playing Machnow overs in general. History would dictate that's not necessarily a smart idea. But yeah, is what it is. Moving on down, we got Umar taking on Behzat Ali-Makhachev. Han. -1,000 for Cousin Umar, +700 for Ali-Makhachev. Tell me about Ali-Makhachev. Because I don't really know much about him. He's 17-1. I mean, his record looks, you know, he's in octagon. Fighting guys with like half decent looking records, but he's taking on Umar, who I have proclaimed as the future champion of the bantamweight division. So nobody else wants to fight. Bezcat says, I'll take that to get myself into the organization. But outside of like, I mean, it's probably priced as banana peels at this point. Like, is Umar going to get hurt or something like that? He's so good that I think he beats everybody in this division. So how could I not pick him? But at -1,000, I mean, there's really nothing there. It's not something that he'll be on, I'm sure, your parlays or your PRP and whatnot, but he's not adding all that much to each individual ticket, particularly, you know, in a two or three leg parlay, he's really not adding much at all. Is what it is. But yeah, Umar keeps getting better. Obviously, nobody wants the Cousin Umar smoke, and for good reason. But yeah, tell me about this Bezcat kid. And how you think this fight's going to shake out.
Yeah, well, again, it's just nobody wants to fight Cousin Umar. I mean, the guy's clearly been calling out everybody. It looked like Corey Sandhagen might be into the fight. Looks like they're trying to put the fight together. It's looking real good. And then at the last second, it's like, no, Corey Sandhagen has more sense than that. Who would want to fight Cousin Umar? So they got to keep the guy busy. They got to keep the guy active. And I can tell you on the regional scene, there's always somebody. Someone's always going to step up. But sometimes the guy's like 5-8. Some guys 0-9. Guys like that keep the sport going, right? The UFC can't use those type of guys. There's always someone willing to do it, but they can't use that level. So now it's like, who's got a decent record that wants to put their hand up and fight this guy? And all of those guys are suddenly unavailable. So you use that little carrot, that little incentive of, let's take a guy outside of the organization that would clearly like to fight in the UFC. It's his dream. It'd be better paydays for him. It's better exposure for him. It's going to bring pride to his country. Perfect. We'll sign a guy, and you know what? Come lose to Umar, and then you get three more fights on a four-fight deal out of it. So that's what they're looking to do. And listen, this is a tough enough customer. He's got a 17-1 record. He's talented enough. Like, he's got some speed. He's got some striking versatility. He's got decent enough ground game. But I've come to realize is these guys from Kazakhstan, they're very well-rounded. And they fight guys with good records. But these guys are usually fighting on that same scene, and they all have good records. They all have padded enough records. They come over to North America, it's a different style, right? That quick takedown, that overexertion of energy, it's not working. The judges are not giving you the points that you thought you would get just based on the takedowns. Now you got to strike more. Now you're striking only this guy you're fighting. He can take those punches, and he's returning fire, and it's a new experience, and the apex is dead quiet, and there's not this live crowd, and there's not hometown Kazakh judges sitting that got your back cage side. So it's a different experience. And if you go back to that fight, Azat Maxim against Charles Johnson from like a month ago, Azat Maxim 17-0. He's 17-0, Paul. But he's like exactly the same. Like, he wins fights. They're always close. They're always competitive. His skill set is good, but it's not great in any one aspect. He's not a killer wrestler. He's not a killer grappler. He's not a killer striker. He's just good, right? And so that's kind of what I see a lot of the same thing here with Bezkat Alkmazan. He's 26 years old, and he's got 18 pro fights. He's well-rounded, but what element of his game does he use to beat Umar Nurmagomedov? So Umar Nurmagomedov could, in theory, let's say he shoots a takedown, and Umar Nurmagomedov sprawls the takedown, front headlock position, and just obliterates this guy with illegal knees to the head. That could be a way he wins. That could be a way he wins. Let's say Umar was to slip and fall and break his leg. That could be a way he wins.
Eye pokes.
No, they'll let you get away with that shit all night. Have you ever seen someone get
disqualified? Mike the Truth Jackson versus, was it Dean Barry?
That was an eye gouge, Paul. That was an eye gouge, not an eye poke.
There we go. There's another opportunity for Bezkat to win.
Umar's not dirty like I'll take your eye out, but it's a thing that happens with Russian fighters is that they'll plow a guy to the head with a knee while they're on the ground and then be like, what? Like, they just had no idea that he was down. And I don't know. I've seen it lots, not necessarily in the UFC, which you've seen it a bunch in the UFC, but other promotions as well. It's like primal instinct takes over. Maybe their like peripheral visions aren't great, so like they can't see you kneed on the ground with two hands down, but they will plow you in the face with the knee. When you're talking 10-1, those are your worst case scenarios. Puncher's chance, yeah, but at this weight class and Umar's chin, and this kid's punching power is not exactly off the charts. Like, puncher chance is always on the table, but like, it doesn't scream, I'm going to clip Umar and put him down. It screams Umar would have to get himself disqualified or hurt. Otherwise, he's got him beat everywhere. And it's a win-win situation for both guys. Umar gets a credible win because the guy's 17-1. It looks good. Of course it looks good, especially if you finish him early. Looks good on paper. It adds to this, you know, momentum. It adds to this legacy of greatness and, you know, this just this monster. It's like WWE, you know, pro wrestling type stuff. Squash match. Go out, beat this guy who looks decent on paper, and, you know, fans want to see you fight again. So it's not a downside for him. If he happened to lose, God forbid, because I'm going to have a ton of money on him in parlays, like you said, you can't do anything straight up. If he was to lose, God forbid, it's not even like, oh, I lost to a schmuck. At least the guy was 17-1. At least the guy had a crazy sounding name. Most fight fans would might give you a pass on it. Like, it's not a lose-lose situation for him. And then for this other kid, he's getting a UFC contract out of it. And no one's going to fault him for losing to Umar Nurmagomedov. It's props. He could have a nice career after this. It's that, unfortunately, to get into the organization, after 18 fights, they haven't signed you. Well, this is the way you get in. So that's what he's unfortunately doing. Again, I can't play contrarian. Someone's going to shit in the apple pie. I find it hard to believe that it would be Umar.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got Eric Anders taking on Jamie Pickett. Minus 500 for Eric Anders. Plus 375 for Jamie Pickett. Minus 500 Eric Anders in this economy, Cody. It's unreal. It was minus 320 the other day, and I thought that was kind of crazy. But do I feel like Jamie Pickett's lost his last four? The volume's incredibly low. He's not really, I don't really know what he's bringing to the table. He doesn't really have heavy hands. He has a little bit of wrestling, but it's like, you know, not dominant. Eric Anders has shown some pretty good stuff recently. I understand why he's the favorite here. Outside of the... What was the fight against, like, Iron Turtle where he got, like, you know, almost doubled up in significant strikes. I will give credit where credit's due. It's like Anders has, you know, increased the significant strikes quite a bit. Like he was going tit for tat with Marc-Andre Berrio, who's always like a pretty high volume guy. But Anders just, we've seen in like multiple fights, like the Darren Stewart fights really kind of stick out like a sore thumb, where it's just like, you know, he was absolutely crushing him early, gets obviously the no contest on the foul. And then the follow-up fights, like, he kind of did nothing and then, you know, took over a little bit late. But it's like, he almost let that fight get away from him. This guy is still probably prone to making some, like, questionable decisions in action. It's really hard for me to justify making a pick on Eric Anders at minus 500. Like, gun to my head, if I had to bet one of the sides here, it would be Pickett, but it'd be small. What about you?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and agree. Like, Eric Anders is he's the rightful favorite. He should win the fight. He wins the fight more often than not. But like at minus 500, you got to realize with Anders is he fights with his foot not on the gas. It's not on the gas. He likes cage control. He likes pinning up his opponents, you know, and taking away that space. He has somewhat heavy hands, but he's very short on knockout wins for the most part. Can knock a guy out. Just, yeah, again, mostly it's these bogs of a fight. And so who's scoring those fights? How close are they? How much cage control is there? Who landed those smaller shots? And Pickett actually does his best work also from the clinch and pinning guys up against the cage. So you can see a lot of like over unders and switching positions and a lot of cage control. And then it's like, it's going to be a relatively close, slow, boring, but competitive enough fight that the judges are going to have to get it one way or another. But you're holding a minus 500 price tag on one of them. That just makes it a tough pill to swallow, I guess. He is the pick. Like I can't go with Jamie Pickett. I will take Eric Anders, but it's not one that you scream at. Pickett, I don't know what it is. Somebody in the UFC organization loves the guy. Like he gets treatment like you would not believe. Here's a guy that was on the Contender Series three times, lost his first two times on the Contender Series, and they brought him back for a third fight, which is unheard of. Why? Why would they do that? And he wins the third fight, and they're just like, here you go, UFC contract. Unbelievable. And he actually loses his first two UFC fights. Overall, he's 2-6 in the UFC, 1-2 on the Contender Series, a record of 3-8 for the organization overall. Currently riding that 4-fight losing streak, I don't know how he's getting another opportunity. And these fights are not overly competitive. In fact, they're quite boring. His last fight with Josh Freund went the distance. He got 2 takedowns. He landed 14 significant strikes, Paul, over the course of 15 minutes. Less than 1 strike per minute. And that's considered an okay performance by his standards. His best performance, I guess, would be his fight with Joseph Holmes, but it's the same thing. 2 takedowns, tons of cage control, and 50 significant strikes. He actually got outstruck by Joseph Holmes, 51-50. But he had the takedowns and the cage control. He's not operating at distance. He's not operating with high volume. He's not operating with power. If he does manage to get the takedown, he's not looking to improve position, and he's not looking for submissions. So he's just going through the motions is all he's really doing. And that plays to Eric Anders' favor, I would think, because Eric, for all of his faults, he's actually fought like a way better level of competition at 185 pounds as compared to 205 pounds, which he's fought at in the past. You know, he is kind of a brick wall of a man, big, strong, physical guy. He's had, you know, some success in his last number of fights. And just look at his last three, right? You got to judge him by his recent activities. Last three, he got robbed. I had Jun Yun Park, so I'm glad. But a lot of people thought he got robbed against Jun Yun Park. He got the 3 takedowns. He got tons of control time. Judges went with the damage. Then he knocks out Kyle Daukaus, a nice little win. Then he fights, like you said, very competitively against Marc-Andre Berrio. Showed some cardio in that fight. Showed some durability in that fight. Showed some output in that fight. Then he takes a grappling match against Kyle Daukaus, you know, just for a little rematch of the MMA days, but showing that he can grapple. And his wrestling's pretty solid. He's in pretty good shape. He's still got some serviceable fights left in him. He's 100% journeyman gatekeeper status. But this is what he does, is he guards the gate. And guys like Jamie Pickett, they don't come through the gate, Paul. They don't. They fan out at the gate to the gatekeeper, and they go away. And then the real prospects, the legitimate guys, the good competitors, they beat the gatekeeper, and they get on through. But that he's got a job to do. It's what he's been set in at this point. and he's going to go out and do it. But do you want to pay minus 500 for a bona fide journeyman gatekeeper? Mm-mm. I think he wins, and I'm a degenerate, and I'll pay minus 500 on him and some stupid parlays. But if they lost, I got nobody to blame but myself because it's a bad bet. It's a bad bet.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Pickett. It's weird that, yeah, in fairness to him, I suppose he's probably getting a little bit of grace because he took the Bo Nickel fight. Short notice.
Yeah, come on.
And credit where credit's due, Cody. Yeah, that fight was only 2.5 minutes, and they matched each other in significant strikes landed.
Ooh.
It was 1-1. 1-1, significant strikes landed. I mean, he got subbed, but, you know.
He had one strike in 2 minutes. That's about on par for what Jamie Pickett generally puts up in fights.
Yeah, but Bo Nickel only had one strike as well.
Because he was looking to strangle him with both hands. It's hard to punch somebody when you're using both of your hands to try to strangle him.
Yeah. He must know where the bodies are buried, like Sam Alvey. Yeah, it's. I was actually looking up while you were talking there. I'm like, when is Contender Series? Because, like, some of these matchups kind of look like they're like, yeah, we could probably, you know, if this guy loses, we could kind of like probably replace him with somebody who's worth like $12,000 a fight. You know, that's coming. The roster cuts, they're coming. I guess it's usually in the summer when it, or like early summer when Contender Series starts rounding into form, I believe. Yeah, so Jamie Pickett, I would imagine his job is on the line this week. And he's his opponent is minus 500. Not a great look.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We got Javid Basharat taking on Ayman Zahabi, minus 900 for Javid, plus 600 for Ayman. I mean, it's one of these fights again, too. It's like, I don't know what to do with these types of fights because, like, I don't do the... I tail you when I'm going to play, you know, minus 1,000 on, like, parlays and stuff. Like, I generally tail you. That's not my style. And, like, I've never really liked Ayman Zahabi. The volume is super, super low. Obviously, he trains with a smart guy in Montreal there and his brother Faraz. And he's shocked us a couple times with some fight-ending ability. Obviously, Draco Rodriguez was able to knock him out. And then last time out there, he has, like, very uninspiring performances. And then it's like, bam, knockout of Arichi Lang, you know, knocks him out in a minute. So it's like he's kind of all over the place. Obviously, he's got technical skills. No one's really, really tested his grappling all that much, and he's going to get that grappling tested against Javid. I think Javid wins minus 900 again. It's become like Bellator pricing. You know what I mean? Like this card particularly, it's just like the matchups are just so wide that it's hard to get super, super excited and, like, how am I going to make money on this card? So, Javid, I guess, is the pick, but minus 900, there's no money really to be made there. What's your take here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be going Javid by decision just because you're trying to improve the price tag. But you're right, dude. It's basically a Bellator card. Bellator, unlike UFC, when you build that PRP, UFC only has two guys at the top, right? That's your top ticket is two guys, and you get close to even money. That next line, two more, you got four fighters, and you're almost certainly looking at plus money. And in fact, you certainly are looking at plus money within that second ticket. Bellator, baby. Sometimes you can get six guys on a ticket and get less than even money because they're the giant favorites. So you're 100% right. I mean, I love Basharat this week. I think Basharat wins. I think he's one of the safe picks. Umar Nurmagomedov is a safe pick. Let's go ahead and parlay a 10-1 with a 9-1. You're getting like, I don't know, minus 475, minus 480. What kind of price tag is that? So, okay, well, we'll add one more. But you add another one of these 6-1 favorites, you know? You got to add, you know, whether it be a Petrino or a Ursig, because that -350 looks so much better than the -9 and 10-1. Like, that's where you're trying to drop some value. So yeah, you're right, man. This is just a line that looked a lot better a few days ago. Money's continuously coming in Bhaskerat. People like Bhaskerat. I'm in favor of the exact same opinion. I already got money on Bhaskerat, so I can't really disagree with it. But, you know, just for the sake of why is he a 9-1 favorite? So, yeah, him and his brother look really good, man. They both look solid. They're both good prospects at this weight class. They're getting solid quality rounds in Las Vegas. They've trained with world-class guys, world-class coaches. Everybody raves about them, says they got really solid skills. They're very well-rounded. They can strike. They can grapple. High ring IQ. Again, I prefer the other Bhaskerat, but these guys are both supremely talented. With Javid, the only thing that kind of irks me a little bit is, like, he tends to just go through the motions a little bit more. He's winning the exchanges, but he's not necessarily looking for that finish. He doesn't mix in his wrestling necessarily as much as his brother, but still very talented. These are good wins. Trevin Jones, even though he's faded at this point, solid win, 89 significant strikes landed. That's key. Tony Gravely, college wrestler out of Appalachian State, solid former, I guess he was a state champion wrestler in high school for Virginia. Guy's solid. American top team, you know, scrappy, decent punching combinations. Takes him down twice, beats him in the scrambles, tires him out. 80 significant strikes landed. Batuse Mondonca, kind of a bum, but 95 significant strikes landed. The three takedowns, solid enough work. And then his last time out against Victor Henry, just the way he acted after kicking him in the balls and telling him he's faking it and just acting like, you know, a bit of a fool. Yeah, maybe he's not my favorite guy, but he generally puts solid volume on these guys. He can take them down. He can win exchanges. He can grapple with them, but he's putting superior volume up to them. His brother's the same way. They'll double you up. You land 10, they'll land 20. You land 50, they'll land 100. Eamon, meanwhile, is just critically low output. All of his fights are low output. 15 minutes with Reginaldo Vieira, 44 landed. Almost 15 full minutes with Ricardo Ramos, 46. 15 full minutes with Vince Morales, 28. Career high against Ricky Tercios in another 15-minute fight when he landed 54. That's a career high. Javid Bhaskerat, it would be a career low. So Eamon now needs to rely on what happened against Richie Lang or what happened with Draco Rodriguez, which is he just melts them with one counterpunch in the first round. But Javid Bhaskerat is also not Richie Lang or Draco Rodriguez. So, like, just waiting for that one shot to land, like, waiting and waiting and waiting and hoping to counter him and melt him, where it has worked against lesser opponents, it probably doesn't figure to work against Bhaskerat. And now, all of a sudden, you waited so much, you're behind the punch count. Like, what cost Moreno this past weekend? Like, he landed the bigger punches. He landed the better punches. And he spent so much time waiting on Royval to throw a six-punch combination before countering. He just allowed the ball to get away from him. Now it's snowballing. Now it's gone. Now there's a minute left in the round, and you're doubled up. So it's problematic. Now, does Eamon Zahabi mix in his wrestling? Well, he is an inferior wrestler to Javid Bhaskerat. And even though he's a BJJ black belt and he's got some decent submission skills, I would not rate his grappling better than Javid. So I don't see him taking down Bhaskerat. In fact, quite the contrary. I think Bhaskerat takes down Eamon Zahabi in this fight. But even if he was to take him down, there's not some giant grappling disparity that he would be able to make great use out of it. And then on the feet, he's going to be getting doubled up. So on the feet, he's losing. On the ground, he's losing. But because he's not very active and he's defensively sound, only been finished one time in his career, third round, spinning back elbow to the face. Come on. He's pretty durable. And Javid Bhaskerat, as talented as he is and as much volume as he's putting up, he's not really knocking guys out, truth be told. So unless he kicks them in the balls, then he might be able to finish you. Outside of that, I just think that it's a high-level sparring match where Bhaskerat doubles him up and lands a few takedowns and wins a clear-cut unanimous decision. But at -900, yeah, what are my worst-case scenarios? And I'm sure there's a bunch.
Yeah, buddy. Here's a great example for this card. Javid Bhaskerat, Umar Nurmagomedov, Eric Anders, Ludovic Klein, and Steve Ursig parlayed together, at least at this book that I'm looking at, +106.
I have that exact same parlay, but Anders isn't on it. And it's not, it's not plus money. So it's pretty ridiculous.
Oh, without Anders, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't. I had to put a bunch of money to make a little.
I wouldn't have put Anders on it either. I was just like, doing it out of interest.
He's the one that's going to shit in the pie.
Minus 140. I mean, you probably got it, you know, when Bacharat was minus 600, minus 900, and so on and so forth. But kind of shows you, it's just like, it's, they're very much defending against the parlays this week. If you can pick, you know, which one of these overwhelming favorites are going to drop the bag this week, it'll be a good one. But it's easier said than done, because there's like big time red flags on a lot of these, like, you know, these big underdogs against pretty mid competition. It's a weird one this week. All right, we got Christian Leroy Duncan taking on Claudio Ribeiro, minus 300 for CLD, plus 250 for Claudio. Who you got?
Yeah, okay, so this one, there's a little more risk for the big favorite because it's striker versus striker. So a lot of these other matchups that we can point out, it's like, well, you know what? If I get into harm, I can just get the takedown. And a lot of the big favorites that we're backing, they have the grappling advantage. They have the wrestling advantage. Christian Leroy Duncan does not. He's a striker. He's like a, I'm not going to compare him to Wonder Boy, but yeah, he's more of a karate-based, state of the outside, very light on his feet, moves laterally, sharpshooter, accurate, but not grindy, doesn't have that cast iron ability, doesn't have any type of really, really deep plan B. And he's fighting a guy in Claudio Ribeiro that really only has a plan A, which is stand in front of you and bomb on you with wild windmill-like punches, hoping something hits pay dirt. Now, I'll be honest with you. In some ways, obviously a different matchup, in some ways it mirrors last week's Zell Huber versus Prado. Now, I like Zell Huber. I end up going probably too high on Zell Huber. You sat here and you made an excellent case for not only Prado could win, but it would specifically have to be the win condition of a knockout win and a first round knockout win. Because you know he's going to bring heat and you know he's going to throw. And even though Zell Huber's a 3-1 favorite, and even though Zell Huber's got this kid outgunned, when it's striker versus striker and homie is swinging on you, anything can happen, Paul. Like it's open. So this one, there's a lot more, you know, risk for sure. But why not back the underdog? Because I don't like him. Like Ribeiro is not good. And you go back and you watch his regional scene where he barely squeaks by mid-level journeyman with 500 records. He's not good. He's explosive for a good 5 minutes. He hits hard for that first round. He's gonna come forward. Doesn't cut angles. Doesn't move his head. Kind of plodding and just swings on you. 2-2 in the UFC, but you see, 1-2 in the UFC, 1-0 on the Contender Series, but that fight with Ivan Venezuela, it's a crazy knockout. It's one of the sloppy exchanges that you'll ever see. He basically twists Ivan right around with the punch, is how off balance Ivan was throwing. So it's a cool highlight reel knockout, but it's like swang and bang. That's about it for him. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, he's down to swing and bang. He's not even all that good, but he's a strong, fit, heavy power puncher with terrible cardio and a judo black belt. And that in itself was enough to knock out Ribeiro. He had to overcome an early Ribeiro swarm, as you'll remember in that fight. But then he just cold cocks him in the second round and knocks him out 28 seconds into it. He beats Joseph Holmes, who's a bum, because swinging on Joseph Holmes is going to work. Holmes is no good. Standing in front of him and swinging big shots is going to be extremely effective. And it was. He can win those type of fights. And then his very next fighting is Roman Kopylov. He hurt Kopylov. He rocked him with like 15 seconds left on the clock. But the rest of the fight is just him getting beat up. Why is he getting beat up? Because Kopylov's longer. He's faster. He's more technical. He beats him to the punch. Power is in Ribeiro's side, but skill and technique is not. And so with Christian Leroy Duncan, one thing playing against him is it's in the apex and it's a small cage. And here's a big boy that likes space and likes range and likes to be able to move around and use his tools. So that being limited to him is interesting for why could a big favorite potentially shit in the pie. The smaller cage, you know, could potentially. But yeah, I mean, I get the impression that Claudio is going to be chasing him around, trying to get in his face, trying to maybe, you know, cut him off and hit him with something and turn the tide of the fight. But he's going to be beat to the punch. He's going to be chasing a lot. He's going to get countered with something. When he gets countered clean, he'll be hurt. Once he's hurt, he goes on the defense. He has no defense. He gets put away. If he doesn't get cold cocked by something and get countered, he's going to tire just chasing him around, have a good first round, land some decent punches in the first round, and then in the second round, slow down. And that Prado kid, he took a hell of a beating in the second, third round, but he could take the beating. Ribeiro cannot take the beating. once you get out of that first round, his game just seemingly completely falls apart. So with Duncan, he's a Cage Warriors champion. He lands a flying knee. He's undefeated. He comes to the UFC. He beats Dusko Todorovic. It was an injury, but he actually looked pretty good for the minute or two that that fight actually went on. He loses to Armin Petrosian, who I rate very highly, and I think the leg kicks was the key to that fight. And then he goes out and he smokes Dennis Tulin. So he's back on the right track. He's learning from his mistakes. He's still young. His style matches up very good against Claudio Ribeiro. And last but not least, we've spent so much talking about Claudio Ribeiro, very one-dimensional, very come-forward, strictly just a power puncher guy chasing a puncher's chance. That also describes Dennis Tulin to a T. Dennis Tulin is not good at anything other than coming forward and trying to crank you with an overhand right before he gasses out. So Duncan literally just fought this version of opponent and showed how that skill and that precision from the outside is very effective against a one-dimensional come-forward brawler, and that's what Ribeiro is going to do. So unless he, like, I don't know, threw a flying knee and, like, walked into overhand right, or, like, threw a spinning back kick and got punched in the back of the head on a counter, something stupid. Yeah, if it just stays standing and it's touch for touch, punch for punch, kick for kick, yeah, Duncan's going to find something, and Duncan will get the job done inside the distance.
Yeah, Claudio Ribeiro is really, really sloppy, is what it is. He comes out, he throws heavy in the first 5 minutes. And there's not much else to really like about his game outside of that. Yeah, it's like the Al Hassan fight. It's just like when Abdul Razak Al Hassan is out cardioing you in round two, you got a problem there. You got a big-time problem there, bud. Yeah, Claudio Ribeiro is going to be dangerous early in his fights, but we've seen kind of enough from him here. It's like, yeah, even like against Kopilov, it's like, yeah, he landed some shots early in the fight, like made it like look a lot more interesting the first 5 minutes, and then who has the precision? Who's able to find, you know, the actual fight-ending shot? It was Kopilov, so... yeah, CLD for me as well. We got Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi taking on Loic Rajabov, minus 170 Al-Sawadi, plus 150 Rajabov. Who you got?
Yeah, so another good fight. A couple debuting guys. Or sorry, not Rajabov, but Al-Sawadi. Yeah, interesting fight. Let me just bring up some of the notes I put on. Not notes, but just come up some of my stats. Al-Sawadi, okay, so... Al-Sawadi seems like he's got solid cardio, solid pace, able to put it on guys. You saw him in the contender series against George Hardwick. He was a big favorite against Hardwick, like a 3-1 underdog. Not expected to do much. Hardwick had a whole lot of success over in the UK. Al-Sawadi, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. He's been looking good against lesser competition on a lesser regional scene, but how do you face that jump up in competition? I honestly really like what I saw out of him. Inside low kicks, decent enough volume, worked over Hardwick. It wasn't like he caught Hardwick and knocked him out on, like, you know, a somewhat fluky punch. It wasn't like he rolled into a submission and caught something you might not catch a guy in every day. He beat him up. He won the rounds. He put on a clean performance, and he looked solid. Offensive wrestling in that fight looked pretty good. It wasn't like Hardwick had a whole lot of exchanges himself, so I'm not 100% sure how good Al-Sawadi's takedown defense is. But you can clearly see in his mechanics, the kid knows how to wrestle. He knows how to wrestle. He's fairly comfortable with the wrestling. And I just feel like he's putting a lot of pieces together and, you know, a well-rounded enough fighter. Fairly young still. Room for improvement. But, yeah, I mean, just like a go-getter. In some ways, like a Bacharach. Bacharach, they're not going to maybe knock you out. They're not maybe going to submit you. Is that they're well-rounded. They put a pace on you. They make good decisions. And they do enough to win rounds in judges' opinions. And win the fight cleanly. So I like what I see out of him. Meanwhile, Loic Rajabov, he's just like, he's too go hard. It's a Tajikistan thing. These guys fight massively hard. I should not have tried to fight Fade Namov last weekend because that was the cleanest win a guy could get. In and out in 30 seconds without taking a punch. Good times. But these Tajikistan guys are very, very powerful, very strong. They come forward. They throw down. They got a bit of combat sambo background, but they're also just very physically strong guys. A lot of them overexert themselves. So on the flip side, in the contrary, with Sawadi, he's making good decisions. He's conserving himself. He's, you know, fighting a very balanced game plan, whereas you have the flip side to that. You know, the Tajik tank, Loic Rajabov, is coming in and he's throwing down. He's trying to land that big shot. He worked against Esteban Ribovic in his debut. He landed 11 takedowns. He got knocked down in that fight. He got tired in that fight. He got hit in that fight, but he relies on the 11 takedowns. And then his last time out against Matheus Rebecki, he can't take down Matheus Rebecki. So with the wrestling being off the table, you see him have to resort to a plan B, which is largely plod forward and throw single punches at a time. It's just not enough. He lands 19 significant strikes through two rounds, two knockdowns by Rebecki landed. Rebecki ends up knocking him out in the second round. So the durability, I'm not fully sold on. His wrestling offense, he's live or die by that. And his cardio is also not all that good. Against Al-Sawadi, if he makes him work and he tires, then his wrestling is not going to work because he's tired. And once it stops working, that's when it falls apart for him. So as much as he would be considered one of the better underdogs on the card because of the price, I don't like him. I don't like him a whole lot. So I think Al-Sawadi goes out there and like, I could see it being a decision win, but I could see him tiring him out and TKOing him some way in the second, late second into the third. I will take decision, but again, I'm not certain that this fight doesn't end inside the distance as well.
Yeah, the problem with Al-Sawadi's issue seems to be, you know, is his durability. He's been knocked out three times in his career, and that's the problem with Loic, is like, I haven't really seen too much, like, you know, one hitter quitter type of power out of him. That's what I would be looking for somebody who is going to, you know, take out Kareem Al-Sawadi. So I'm with you. I'll take Al-Sawadi as well.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
We got Ludovic Klein taking on AJ Cunningham. Klein, a minus 800 favorite. Cunningham can be had for plus 550. AJ Cunningham, I believe he's like Bryce Mitchell's like brother-in-law or something like that. He was on Contender Series.
It's his cousin.
His cousin? Yeah, they're probably all cousins, let's be honest, down there in Arkansas.
Wife included.
Yeah, cousin, wife, sister, it all gets
same thing.
Where these boys come from, it all gets a little blurry for sure. But no, he had like a very, very interesting story, obviously. Like, sounds like he had like the world's worst like father, parents growing up. They fed him dog food. And all this other stuff, like pretty, pretty nasty upbringing. And that's where it's like, I level with the guy. I feel bad for him, but it's like he showed on Contender Series in that fight against Steven Nguyen, who I don't think is on Ludovic Klein's level. The skills weren't really all there. The one thing he did have going for him was like, he was way too tough for his own good. He was taking an absolute beating in that fight. Goes back onto the regional scene, beats some guy who's 8-10, gets a call on short notice. Here we are. This fight shouldn't be competitive, arguably. I mean, if we're not in Vegas, where, you know, the UFC is pretty close with the commission, I mean, if you ran this fight in Toronto, would the commission even let it happen, Cody? Like, I think that's the real question.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. The guy's 12 and he's 11 and 3. Like, there's no way that they would be like, oh, no, no, dude. They'd be like, oh, he's got a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Oh, his cousin's Bryce Mitchell. Oh, he's got a pretty good-looking record on paper. Sure.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a beating. It's a beating incoming.
Ludovic Klein going to kill him. It's not going to be competitive. No. How do you sell this? This fight, short notice, kid got absolutely smoked by lesser competition. The only thing that he really showed in that fight is that he could take an insane amount of damage. Like a dangerous amount of damage. Like, he got killed. Wasn't even close. He did nothing. I don't know. It seems really like short-sighted. It seems kind of weird for them to put him into this spot. I'm sure it's good for him. He gets himself into the octagon. And it's not that Ludovic Klein is some sort of massive world beater or anything, but I don't know. It just feels like forced, to be perfectly honest. Like, there was nobody else. just AJ Cunningham? That was the only person who answered the call? Come on.
Well, I don't know. It's on a week's notice. Ludovic Klein is a tough matchup because he's actually really good, and he's got no name recognition. Like, the win doesn't look great, and the loss doesn't look great. So, like, why would you want to fight this guy who's at a full camp and is talented on short notice? So, like, I can see not exactly people with their hands up. And normally they just take these guys that are local to the Las Vegas area. Oh, you're in Vegas? You're at Extreme Couture? You're at Syndicate MMA? You're training in Las Vegas? You got your medicals in order? You don't need a passport. You don't need travel accommodations. Great. Then we'll just throw them on. But at some point, you run out of those guys. So it's like, let's branch off. I would say it's a bit of a favor fight in that AJ Cunningham, he's got a story. You feel for guys like that. You want to see him compete at the highest level and live out his dream. So maybe that's the angle. Having Bryce Mitchell as a cousin, that certainly helps because, you know, I'm sure they've put it in Dana's ear. Hey, man, this guy stays ready. If you have an opportunity, doesn't matter who it is, this kid will step up, and he will. And we've got some mutual friends, so, like, I see what he's up to online a whole lot. And, yeah, he's in the gym every day. Like, it's what these kids do in Arkansas. They're tough. They're scrappy. You know, Paul and I were cutting jokes earlier. But the bottom line is, like, they're very strong. They're very physical. They work manual labor jobs, and then they still go to the gym afterwards. So he's in good shape. He's been staying ready. It's not like he's just rolling off the couch to take this fight. I just don't think it's a good fight for him. So you can bang away at the Bryce Mitchell family comparison all you want. The fact is, it just ends up costing you money. You look at his losses, even dating back to two losses back, Javier Garcia. Guy's 5-3. AJ Cunningham, 7-1. This fucking guy's 5-3 for LFA 102. He is a -375 betting favorite over Javier Garcia. And he took a beating. He goes through the motions. He's got no striking defense. He doesn't move his head. He stands there. He gets hit. He's trying to get the fight to the ground, but his wrestling's not all that good. He doesn't come from a base. He never wrestled on, you know, the Little Rock wrestling team. He never went through. He's a tough, scrappy, I'm down to throw down, and I got, you know, some jiu-jitsu. But with the inability to get the fight to the ground and to stand for a prolonged period, he's taking a whole lot of damage. So he blew that one as a big favorite. He beats Jonathan Jackson, who's 5-2, his very next fight, on a split decision. Here's Bryce Mitchell's cousin. Here's a guy that trains with him every day. Here's a guy that's got Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Like, and yet he's squeezing by like mediocre regional show level guys. So fast forward to the Steve Nguyen fight. All of these fights that he's been getting his ass kicked in, right? They've all been happening at 145 pounds. Okay. 145. He's moving up to 155 to fight Ludovic Klein. So not only is he on short notice, not only is he not overly competitive with mid-level featherweights, he's now moving up to lightweight on short notice to fight a fringe top 15, like a fringe top 20 guy in the division. That's a hell of a task. But last but not least, even if I didn't know anything about either guy, I was just presented with the footage of both guys. Ludovic Klein kills him. Ludovic Klein's got much better wrestling, right? So if Ludovic wants to take the fight to the ground, or if he starts to tire, or if he got clipped with something and he needs to take a break, he could take the fight to the ground when he wants. Flip side of that, Cunningham's not going to take Ludovic Klein down. So what you're going to likely have is Klein dictating where he wants the fight to take place, but it'll probably be a striking match. Now, when you watch AJ Cunningham, his biggest weakness is he can't defend the jab because he's not moving his head, because he's not a boxer, because he's not, you know, a sound defensive striker in the slightest sense of the imagination. He stands there, head straight on the line, hands fairly low, and a simple jab is the most effective thing. You don't need to wing these bombs at him. You just had to hit him with a clean, sharp, right down the middle, straight jab. Nguyen landed over 100 significant strikes, but he pieced him up with the jab. But Ludovic Klein's got a good jab, but he's a southpaw. So what he's got better than a jab is he's got a straight left down the middle. And that straight left down the middle is going to be there all night long. So Cunningham's going to get knocked out. If Cunningham shows unbelievable toughness and resiliency, he takes a 30-26 style beating. And yeah, it's MMA. So like Klein could slip on a banana peel and Cunningham, you know, hits pay dirt with one big move. But like, it's so unlikely, man. Klein is bona fide. Him, Umar, and Javid Basharat, like they're bona fide. They should win. Umar's taking on a guy on short notice who's unheralded. Klein's taking a guy on short notice who's coming up a weight class who's pretty unheralded. And Javid Basharat's actually taking on, you know, Faraz's little brother, got, you know, three-fight winning streak in the UFC. Like, at least his fight's a little more competitive on paper. But I understand these big favorites. Like, I understand. Well, I understand where the line got set and why they got steamed. But at this point in the week, while we record this on a Wednesday, they are steamed, bro.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I don't intend to have too much action on UFC Vegas 87, to be perfectly honest, this week. Just nothing's really popping for me this week on this card. Like, nothing really jumps out as, like, I think that's a really good bet. It's like, eh. You just, yeah, too many massive, massive faves. Just not my style to, like, you know, string them all together and try to just, like, and just hope to not fall on that banana peel. Because, like, that's what happens in MMA. Somebody is going to make them, like, whether it's, yeah, it's just like, you know, people get fouled, you know, knee to the head of a grounded opponent and they get a disqualification. Well, bye-bye all of your super, super chalk tickets. Like, that's why I let you do that. I let you do that, Cody. Just not my style. All right, finally, we've got Vinicius Oliveira taking on Bernardo Sopai. I guess Vinicius Oliveira was on Contender Series. I don't really recall that fight. This fight was, like, just added to the card, like, kind of literally, I think, like, this morning, maybe late last night or something, because it wasn't on it yesterday. Haven't looked into it. Couldn't tell you anything about Bernardo Sopai and Vinicius Oliveira. I'm sure I watched this fight on Contender Series, but I don't recall it. So I don't even have a pick. I'm going to tell yours. What's yours?
I'm just trying to see the line and making sure that...
Minus 150 plus 130.
That's what you got out, but is it even money or is it swinging in that direction?
Let's see.
What was its opener? You see, some books are not even listing it at all.
Okay, so now it's a pick'em. It's a pick'em basically. I mean, over the course of this show, kind of shows you how early that line is in the week. It's like literally flipped. Or went to a pick'em basically. But yeah, dude, I have no idea. I don't even really care, to be perfectly honest. Do you have a take on this fight? Because I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'd definitely like to research it some more before you feel real good about it and wait for the line to kind of settle, because it opened and I totally agreed with the opener on it. I think that Vinicius is a favorite and he is a slight favorite. And Bernardo Sopage is, you know, fine fighter in his own right, but he would be considered the slight underdog. But yeah, I noticed there was some line movement, like, right away, that it had moved near to an even money fight. And at this point, you just sit on it and you wait. I hit the underdog last weekend, the Sierra Dinwiddie, right? She's from Canada. She's on the LFA card. Anyways, she's plus 130 opener. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm betting it. I just kind of put it off. I go to bet it again on Friday morning and she's a plus 330 underdog. Well, I still bet it, and it won. And I was like, what kind of line movement was that? But, like, they're fairly soft because it's not a big market. It just got dropped, and money's going to swing this thing. And so whereas I think that Vinicius is the rightful favorite and probably does win the fight, and I would like to bet him, I would have bet him at minus 150, and now I can get him at even money. So wait for this thing to settle down a little bit. And listen, the pick could change, but I'm going to go with Vinicius for the time being. So with Bernardo Sopage, he's out of All Stars MMA, a 23-year-old kid, trains out of Europe, trains with some of the best guys in Europe. Obviously, with that young age, he's inexperienced, but he's going to be getting better. He's going to be making some improvements. The key problem for me is that watching this guy in fights, he don't look like a bantamweight. He looks like a flyweight. And now, UFC fight stats don't have anything listed for height and reach on him, but Tapology says he's 5'6". And I would say he is no taller than 5'6", maybe 5'5". Probably 5'6", let's be fair. So right off the get-go, he's giving up 3 inches of height to Vinicius Moreira, who is a good-sized bantamweight, and probably going to give up some inches in the reach department as well. So a little bit troubling. Now, Vinicius Moreira, guy's pretty decent. He picks up some quality wins for Brave CF, or sorry, UAEW Warriors. He beat Xavier Aloui, who's a solid Canadian bantamweight, you know, good-level fighter. Beats his Sylvester Chimfu. First rounder, naked choke, solid win. Ali Taleb. Now, Ali Taleb is also out of All-Stars Gym, right? So Taleb's a top guy, man. He's undefeated. He's a top prospect. He can wrestle like a beast. He's 6-0 at the time. These guys throw down. It's a good fight. It's a really good fight. If you want to watch a fight for the sake of some tape research, go back and watch that thing. These guys throw down. But ultimately, he does get clipped in the third round and gets put away. Rebounds from that, winning one more, comes to the Contender Series and gets a first-round win over Victor Madrigal. What I like about him is that he sets up a lot of stuff with his inside kick, but he's active with the inside kick. So if he can stay at range, he's constantly just peppering you, peppering the legs, peppering the legs, peppering the legs. Solid work rate, solid leg kicks, demobilizes you, and then cranks you with one of these big shots. He's got some quick hands. He's got a lot of finishing ability. His win condition is usually first-round finish. His last three wins have been in the first round. That's usually how he likes to get it done. If it drags on, his cardio is not terrible, but if it drags on and he's getting countered and he's getting hit with some heavy stuff, like the Ali Taleb fight, yeah, his durability isn't, it's not super trustworthy. Like, he could get dropped. The problem with Sopaj is one, he's coming in on short notice. He was supposed to, Tapology says he's got a fight with Ricardo Montero 1 week after this UFC fight. Obviously, it's not happening anymore, but he's booked for a fight. He's had a camp. He's in shape. So don't think this kid's just rolling over and he's going to show up. But I do think he's undersized. I do think he comes in here. I think he struggles a little bit with that distance management. 23-year-old kid, UFC debut, in the Apex, different vibe, planning on fighting one guy. Now you're fighting a completely different guy. And I think when you see them at weigh-ins, then it'll be a lot more prevalent that Vinicius has got a pretty good size and probably good stature advantage over him, just like the bigger, longer man. So I think being the bigger guy, the natural bantamweight, and those inside low kicks and just staying active with them probably is enough to make him the slight favorite, which he was. But now that he's even money, yeah, he's the pick. Do I feel great about it? No. Do I want to tape study this thing for a lot longer than I probably have? Yeah, sure. The fight just got announced. Like, I'd like to let the line settle, check out the weigh-ins, feel better about it. But tentatively, yeah, the pick for me would be Vinicius pre-flop.
And yeah, I mean, even by the time people listen to this show, it could probably move a lot because, yeah, it's very, very, I mean, not every book is even carrying it right now. Must have been added like early this morning or something. All right. Yeah, we'll save. I was going to ask you about Latana, but we'll save that for maybe next week or another future show. Before we go, hit them with the PRP code.
I mean, it's chalky, but we do have a couple underdogs. Yerzino Rozenstruik +130 at the top. He's dog number one. We're going to go with Vitor Petrino. We're going to go with Alex Perez is the PRP pick. He's dog number two at +290. We're going to go with Steve Ursig, Umar Nurmagomedov, Eric Anders, Javid Basharat, Christian Leroy Duncan, Abdul Karim El-Sawadi, Ludovic Klein, and Vinicius Oliveira. So, like, yeah, pretty chalky. 11 fights, two underdogs. Not the worst thing in the world. And yeah, like Paul's saying, you put some of these favorites together, it's not going to pay anything. It really won't. But as far as parlay goes, and if you're trying to do the parlay business, it's like if you just can focus on one of your -300s, let's say it's, I'm just bringing up my parlay builder just so I know the exact numbers. Okay, so you're like, okay, I like Christian Leroy Duncan, right? That's the pick. You've done the tape research. You like him. It's like, this is my guy. He's -310. And I think he kills Claudio Ribeiro, but like, what can you get on a -310? So, well, you know, I guess I really think Ludovic Klein murders a guy this weekend in the UFC, and Umar Nurmagomedov, like, you know, I can't see him losing. Now, all of a sudden, your -310 on Christian Leroy Duncan is a -162. And it pretty much is still a Christian Leroy Duncan bet. Yeah. Yeah, you need two other guys to win on it, but
that's what they always say, Cody. That's what they always say.
I know, Paul, but one, we are degenerates, and two, this is a system that has worked for me. I don't care anybody else's doings. Focus on your shit, and you got to sniff out the pie shitter is the key. Sniff out the pie shitter. Just the way it goes. Every sport, man, any sport you try to bet, these -500s, these -600s, these -700s, they're going to lose. The way it's set up, you can't hit it seven times in a row. If it's -700, you can't bet an individual -700 and win seven times in a row. You'll lose on that fourth time. You'll lose on that fifth time. House always wins. But yeah, that's like a prolonged period of time. We're talking about one event. I need two mega favorites to win. And that maybe it's not Christian Leroy Duncan. Maybe it's somebody else. Hell, I think Bacharach rolls him up. I'm going to throw that one on it. Oh, shit. Now I'm looking at a minus 126. And that ticket is only a Christian Leroy Duncan ticket, right? So then what I would do is I would make that four-fight ticket, and then I would drop Christian Leroy Duncan. So you drop him. And then I say, okay, I really also like Chris Urseg. So now I make a ticket. It's Chris Urseg and those three big favorites. It's just a Chris Urseg ticket. Now, where you go wrong is one of your big favorites lose. Paul's right. It's gambling. We all know what we're getting ourselves into. But there's really, unless you got some hot props or you have some hot totals, you're going to have to parlay this weekend. These favorites are outrageous.
Yeah, so it's buy or beware. It's tough sledding out there this week. Congratulations to the books. You made a lot of this like almost unbettable this week. And like for guys like me, I'm gonna have greasy parlays and stuff. But like there's nothing that I'm throwing like big money at this week. Is what it is. Congratulations, books. You made me not really want to be a degenerate all that much. There's plenty of other crap that I'll be betting this week. I'm always betting something, Cody. It is what it is. It's a lifestyle at this point. Anyway, that is it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For producer Megan and Cody Saftick, I'm Paul Shaughnessy saying goodbye and good luck. Oh, oh, oh. Oh.